After two horrific mass shootings over the weekend, President Trump blamed mental illness for the violence.
We must reform our mental health laws to better identify mentally disturbed individuals who may commit acts of violence and make sure those people not only get treatment, but when necessary, involuntary confinement. Mental illness and hatred pulls the trigger, not the gun.
This was not the first time the president has made that link. So far, he's blamed at least 9 high-profile mass shootings on mental illness.
We have a lot of mental health problems in our country, as do other countries.
The difficult issue of mental health.
I think that mental health is your problem here.
On Monday, the American Psychological Association released a statement responding to the president's remarks, saying the overwhelming majority of people with mental illness are not violent and that, quote, a history of violence is the single best predictor of who will commit future violence. And access to more guns and deadlier guns means more lives lost. Additional research from the University of Texas Medical Branch shows that mental health is not a major factor in someone's propensity for gun violence. But the University of Texas found that the more access someone had to guns, the more likely they were to commit acts of violence with them. Politicians, especially those from the GOP, have continued to link mass shootings to mental illness, especially when the perpetrator is white.
There's some pretty sick kids out there, and I think we got to do a better job of mental health.
It seems like one common denominator is mental illness.
There's mental health and addiction issues.
We don't know right now exactly why this deranged individual did this.
People with mental illness are getting guns and conducting these mass shootings.
So to start this hour, we're going to get the facts versus fiction on mental illness and violence in America at a moment when those words, mental illness, are being thrust to the forefront of a grieving nation's national conversation. I'm Tanzina Vega. This is The Takeaway. Joining me now is Jonathan Metzl, the director of Vanderbilt University's Center for Medicine, Health, and Society. Jonathan, welcome to the show.
Thanks so much.
And on the line is Dominic Sisti, director of the Scattergood Program for Applied Ethics in Behavioral Healthcare at the University of Pennsylvania. Dominic, welcome.
Thank you.
So, Jonathan, let's start with you. Is there any correlation between violence and mental illness?
Well, let me first say that I can completely understand why people turn to a mental illness narrative after mass shooting. It's such a traumatic moment. On an emotional level, I think this narrative makes sense. But on a political and policy level, it is a complete distraction. Unfortunately, data, study after study shows that persons diagnosed with serious major mental illness are, in fact, much more likely to be the victims of violence, not the perpetrators of violence. And if you just go down the list, depression, anxiety, schizophrenia, all the major psychiatric diagnoses, these are all mental illnesses that end up taking people away from society. So they're less likely to plan an attack, commit an attack, factors like that.
Well, there's also the question, Jonathan, about the underlying issues for many of the shooters, not all, but many of the ones that we're learning about seems to be radicalization, hatred of women, of people of color. I'm wondering why so many politicians are conflating those issues with mental illness.
Well, it's an easy talking point and it's a distraction. If you're talking about mental illness, you're not talking about much more difficult topics like race and racism. There's very often misogyny involved in these narratives. And also, we're not talking about gun laws. And so it's been a very useful talking point to not get us to talk about what we should be talking about, which is how can we come together across divides? Gun owners and people who are, you know, responsible gun owners, people on all sides of this divide, people who feel strongly about gun control. How can we come together and create reasonable policy in the middle? But when we're talking about these large, lofty, charged narratives, it makes it harder for us to enact reasonable common sense solutions to the violence that we're all experiencing.
Dominic, I'd like to bring you in here because in the president's statement, he said that people with mental illness should be, quote, involuntarily confined in certain circumstances as a way to prevent mass shootings. What are the ethics of that proposal, Dominic?
The ethics really turn on the empirical evidence that such action would not prevent mass shootings really at all. And so it would be largely unethical and I think impractical to be able to identify individuals who are at risk for such violence and attempt to involuntarily confine them in a psychiatric hospital. There is no evidence that it would work. And two, it would be impossible to predict who those individuals should be that should be confined.
And I guess the other question is, where would these people be confined? I think we think about mental health institutions that back in the 50s and 60s that existed in this country. But is there even an infrastructure at this point to even carry out something like that?
There are psychiatric hospitals and there are state laws that would mandate an individual who is a risk to themselves or others to be placed involuntarily in a psychiatric ward. The capacity for forensic use is there. The capacity for civil use to get people the care they need, the treatment they need in a psychiatric hospital is largely not there. The number of beds in this country has evaporated significantly since the 1970s, and we now have a dearth of psychiatric beds in this country for people who are seriously mentally ill and who need structured inpatient care. It's not important to prevent mass shootings. Let me just say that up front. The idea of increasing our bed capacity, and that's sort of the metric that we use to describe how much inpatient care is available in this country for psychiatric problems, is important because there are individuals with very serious mental illnesses who are not receiving the treatment they need in the community.
And to that point, Jonathan, Congress and President Trump have talked a lot about reforming mental health laws to address current and future violence. But what have they actually done towards that end? I mean, have they done anything to promote mental health awareness or treatment?
As a psychiatrist, I'm all for more mental health treatment. I'm all for investing more in the mental health system. That's a different issue than preventing mass shootings entirely. But it is important to note that, you know, I can list many instances from President Trump overturning President Obama's executive orders about eliminating firearms to people with very severe mental illness. Not that those people would commit a shooting, they're just quite debilitated. But President Trump overturned that a couple of years ago. Everything to things that aren't really getting talked about right now, like attacking the Affordable Care Act. Well, the Affordable Care Act had a lot of language about mental illness parity. And so, in a way, the actions that have been done by the Trump administration are really undermining mental illness treatment. Now, there is one other important point to keep in mind, which is President Trump also mentioned so-called red flag laws. Those are laws that try to kind of find a kind of narrow space between these large issues. Red flag laws allow for a temporary removal of a firearm from someone who may be an imminent threat to themselves or someone else just for a period of between 7 and 21 days. And that kind of uses the mental illness language, but it doesn't use the diagnosis, right? I think that's the important point. So there is a narrowed point of hope here, and we'll have to see what happens with that particular issue.
And Dominic, I want to get your thoughts on red flag laws, because the president and other members of the GOP have been touting these red flag laws, you know, since this shooting. But it almost feels that this is putting the onus on family members to make a diagnosis about something. Dominic, I'm curious about your thoughts on the ethics of doing that.
So I think that, you know, the red flag laws are a common sense idea. I think it is a good idea to allow the people who are most intimately aware of the individual's values and motives to have a voice, to be able to say, you know, my son is acting strangely. He might be dangerous. He has access to firearms. It does get dicey. It does get difficult for family members to have that burden on them, to be able to say with confidence, you know, my son is having trouble, is potentially violent. Let's get the guns away. Oftentimes, family members themselves are gun collectors. There's guns in the home. There's a multifaceted problem here in the fact that there are guns everywhere. And so while the red flag laws might take a marginal chunk of the risk away, the nation is just flooded with guns. So it will be really difficult to keep these really awful weapons out of the hands of people who want to use them.
We spoke to Devlin Barrett, who's from the Washington Post and was covering these issues about the political side of red flag laws. And I want to play a clip about what he had to say.
So when you talk about red flag laws, it's another way for Republicans to say, we're not going to look at guns. We are going to look at mental health. And we are going to push those decisions down to the states, because the reality is, in a lot of states, it would be fairly difficult to pass red flag laws. And you're basically pushing that responsibility down as opposed to up to Washington.
Jonathan, your thoughts?
There's a reason why these are state level laws. These aren't federal laws. And I think it's important to note that the data that we have so far, red flag laws really have only been in effect in 17 states and DC. Since 2013 is when they started. The best data that we have is that they're possibly effective in preventing suicide. Their effectiveness in preventing mass shooting is really anecdotal at this point. I personally only know of a few studies that show about interventions that stop mass shootings. And those aren't about red flag laws. They're actually about state-level gun policies. So if you live in a state that has tight gun laws and the states around you have tight gun laws, your state will probably have fewer mass shootings. So it really gets back to red flag laws are important in conjunction with laws that do everything else.
Dominic, I'm curious about, we hear about this often, that the perpetrator, if the perpetrator of a mass shooting is white, the initial response is that this was about mental illness. If not, we often don't hear about the mental illness explanation if there's the shooter is of color. And I'm wondering, do you have any sense of what role the perpetrator's race plays in this use of the term mental illness?
We hear about mental illness when it is a single white male, usually a loner of some sort, who has been victimized over their life as a kid, perhaps, and now they're lashing out. And we don't hear this about individuals who are of other races and colors. They're typically branded as terrorists. For example, we didn't think of the 9/11 hijackers as mentally ill. We saw them for what they were, evil. And so when we bring up the trope of mental illness only for Caucasian white men, what we're doing is exculpating them of their evil act, in a sense. We're saying, look, they were sick. They didn't know what they were doing. They were unable to make this moral judgment correctly. And we don't hear that with minorities.
Jonathan, I want to also mention that we talked a little bit about the perpetrator's motives being sometimes driven by misogyny, by racism. But this idea that it's about mental illness also sort of ignores the societal elements that are influencing these men, largely men, to commit these mass shootings. I mean, what are we missing there? It's not just about video games. I mean, there are other countries in the world that have violent video games, that have mental illness. And we're not seeing the type of violence every day that we are seeing in this country.
There's no evidence that watching a video game, I mean, think about how many people play video games in this country versus the number of people who commit mass shootings. It's infinitesimal. There's no evidence that playing video games causes mass shootings. I do think that there, of course, are issues about the rise again of white nationalism and white supremacy. What do mass shootings reflect about the bigger culture of white supremacy in this country? And how can we have a conversation about the ideology?
Jonathan Metzl is the director of Vanderbilt University's Center for Medicine, Health, and Society. Thanks, Jonathan, for being with us.
Thanks so much.
And Dominic Sisti is the director of the Scattergood Program for Applied Ethics and Behavioral Healthcare at the University of Pennsylvania. Dominic, thanks so much.
Thank you.
At Radiolab, we love nothing more than nerding out about science, neuroscience, chemistry.
But we do also like to get into other kinds of stories. Stories about policing or
politics,
country music,
hockey,
sex of bugs.
Regardless of whether we're looking at science or not science, we bring a rigorous curiosity to get you the answers.
And hopefully make you see the world anew.
Radiolab, adventures on the edge of what we think we know.
Wherever you get your podcasts.